This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. One second here. I'm briefly dressing. Well, that's not right. I just realized that didn't. That's going to lead to some interesting questions. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday afternoon. Good to be with you, Matt and Brett, here today. Matt Robison is going to join us right now. Great editorial with him about this whole idea that, you know, these indictments somehow help Trump. No, they don't. I'm with him on that. And as a matter of fact, we can expand off on this, the doom reporting for the left, which seems to happen with aplomb nowadays. We'll talk to him about that. How about this? Robert Barill back with us again today, 4:35 this afternoon. Barill, he sold out. He's at Acme. He sold out last night. He sold out tonight already. He's got shows on Friday and Saturday. So, yeah. How about that?
Well worth it. Very funny. So people who got their tickets and sold out that show, they're going to get their money's worth.
They're going to get their money's worth. Barill is fantastic. Can I just say how happy I am for Robert Barill? Robert Barill is literally one of my favorite comedians. Love the guy. This was 6 weeks after I started here. This is 13 plus years ago. 6 weeks afterwards, I got a guy call from a comedy club, said, would you like to bring me, I want to bring a comedian by, local guy, pretty funny. Said, sure. Brings him by and by. It's Barill. He and I sit and chat. I'm just rolling. I am rolling with that interview. Every time I talk to him, he makes me laugh. And I have watched as he's worked the upper Midwest. Now he works nationally, and he's selling out Acme. And how cool is that? Go get your tickets. We'll talk about that with him coming up here before too long. 952-946-6205. One of the more quirky things about me, Brett, my cousin is Joy Summers, who is the fantastic food journalist over at the Star Tribune. I got to have lunch with her today. That was nice. I'm always, where do you want to eat? It's like, why are you asking me? You are like the goddess of food. You tell me where we're needing going. Had a nice little one. Went over to Kenwood, over in the Kenwood neighborhood, over there, right off Lake of the Isles. Delightful. Good stuff. Enjoyed that greatly. Got to see my auntie. My mom was there. It was nice to have everyone together. It is. Do you have, we always have some relative that's kind of got kind of a unique, cool job. Do you have anyone or?
Oh, I'm trying to think. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. No.
Well, you're the cool one.
Maybe it's me. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I don't want to pat myself on the back too much.
Well, I do. I have a cousin that actually for a while was, he was SpongeBob SquarePants over at the MOA.
Was he?
Yeah.
Now that's solid. Yeah. There you go. Because, I mean, at any given time on the planet, how many SpongeBob SquarePants are there running around? I was doing metro traffic, and I was doing airborne traffic, which sucked. By the way, just flying around that beach grass sport around the metro, not fun. But when I was doing that, I mean, it was always a great intro into cocktail party conversation because I'm literally one of maybe 400 or 500 people nationwide or worldwide even that's an airborne traffic reporter. And it's like not many people do stuff like that. And that's kind of cool. Now, I prefer very much to be in the studio 100%.
Did they ever let you fly the chopper?
No, it wasn't a chopper. It wasn't a chopper. I just watched Predator 2. I did not have to get to the chopper. I did not have to do that.
I'm hoping you did. That would be awesome if you did.
I did fly the Beechcraft Sport every once in a while. There's like, hey, can you take the... Okay, we're in a two-seater. There's no row and restroom behind us. It's just a little plane. Hey, can you take the control for a second? Sure. I don't know where you want me to take it. And all of a sudden you start doing that thing where you're trying to adjust the flight and you realize I don't have the nuance of this. I'm like, okay, we're going down fast. Okay, we're going up fast. We're going down fast. Okay, I'll take it from here. Thank God. Thank God. I understand that this is the chimp zone, that any person with a voice could come in here and bloop, 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 bloop. But I can't do that pilot stuff. Hey, just, yeah, sure. Let me buzz the big buildings downtown. Yeah, why not?
thing. Maybe budget cuts. Well, you got to do the reports and fly the thing at the same
time. Do not give them ideas. Do not give them ideas. Actually, there's a lot of guys that do that. Do you know that?
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, they are. That they've. It's mainly helicopter guys, and especially like L.A., but there's a lot of people that do that. That basically, I'm taking it up, and I'm the talent in the bird. I'm the talent here. I'm the person making the noise. 952-946-6205. How much experience do you have with razor wire?
I can't say a ton.
Oh, come on. You've got a criminal background. I already know it, Brett.
None that I'll admit to.
You and your pandas. An inmate attempted an escape at a Minnesota prison before he ultimately became stuck in the razor wire and was taken back into custody. The Minnesota Department of Corrections spokesperson tells the Bring Me the News crew that the incident happened around 9 p.m. at MCF Faribault, Go Fightin' Mad Prisoners. The man initially made it over the interior fence, but then got caught on the razor ribbon as he attempted to climb the exterior fence. And by the way, there's a picture of the razor wire. What are you thinking, dude? You know, what are you, like an Olympic gymnast? You think you're going to flip over that thing? Staff were able to cut him free, and the inmate was taken to hospital with injuries not considered to be life-threatening. He was brought back to the facility a few hours later. He has not been identified. It is a minimum security facility. I'm going to presume he's not going to be there for long. The reason I bring this up is when I was in the military, because, yes, believe it or not, at one point, I was your front line of defense. Yeah, you should be scared. Oopsie, am I supposed to hit the nuclear bomb like that? I was your first line of defense. I had to work with razor wire. Everyone does. I mean, you just kind of, it's something that if you get into certain zones, you kind of sometimes will wrap it around your vehicle or something like this. That stuff's a freaking mess, man. Even when you are the person in charge of it, you're going to get stuck, cut. Ugh. It's horrible, man. I wouldn't try to jump into it. Big old pile of it, like Linus into the leaves. You know, I don't know what you're thinking, man, but that is not a good call. You see razor wire, you can't get through that. It's like the alligator swamp. He ran off in that direction. No one's seen him since. Well, I think we're done here. I think we know what happened to him. I didn't James Bond it across the thing, so. What was that in television game back? Like you're way too young. You wouldn't even know it. The television game where you could jump over the alligators like that.
Did this television show last very long?
No, it's not a television show. For God's sakes, it was in television. Intelligent television.
Oh, gotcha.
When they used George Plimpton to sell it, and when you're a teenager, nothing screams buy more than George freaking Plimpton. This still had the most obnoxious controller of any video game console you could ever get, hands down. But still, I remember my parents looking at me play these video games and saying, look, he's going to be in computers. Look at him. He's playing Mr. Pac-Man. I bet he's going to be a CEO of a company soon. It's not how it worked. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I got a really bad story to get to, before I get to that, I want to give a bit of good story here. And this involves the guy we talked about a lot over the last few years, Jaleel Stallings. He was beaten by Minneapolis police officers after he shot at them in self-defense in 2020. He launched a nonprofit called the Good Apple Initiative to encourage good apples in law enforcement, government, criminal justice system, and community to work together to change the culture of Minnesota policing, even though he was a victim of many of his very institutions. 5 days after George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police, as police struggled to regain control of the city amid protests and riots, SWAT team drove around the city shooting 40-millimeter non-lethal rounds without warning at curfew violators from an unmarked van, not announcing they were police. Stallings, an Army veteran with a gun permit and a pistol, was hit in the chest with one of their rubber bullets, which once again, they fired without warning or identifying themselves as the police. While he was standing there on Lake Street parking lot, he thought he'd been hit by a bullet, so he fired 3 rounds in the direction of the van, purposely missing them to scare off the shooters, because he's a veteran and he knows that, you know, this is, You don't just fire blindly, as opposed to the Minneapolis Police Department at that time, who were just firing blindly. The SWAT team spilled out of the van, then beat Stallings for 30 seconds, even though he had immediately dropped flat on the ground when they realized they were cops. He was hospitalized with a fractured eye socket, charged with 8 crimes, including attempted murder murder of police officers. The incident made national headlines, caught the attention of then-President Donald Trump's campaign war room, which called Stallings a would-be cop killer. Fortunately, there was body cam footage which showed that, indeed, he was not the cop killer. The killer, surprisingly enough, was coming from inside their own house. Stallings was acquitted before a jury at body camera and for surveillance videos contradicted the officers' stories. They lied. The officers lied repeatedly. The Reformer reported in September 2021, he later sued the city, won $1.5 million settlement plus cost and attorney's fees. He has moved to Houston and began working with his attorney, Eric Rice, on his deal of doing something to change the system. I want to remind everyone, once again, the police... Arredondo, who was supposedly the good guy police chief, he knew he was innocent. The police knew he was innocent. I highly doubt the prosecutorial office didn't know that he was innocent. And they still, up until the very end, were trying to get him to take a plea deal. And he was acquitted because he did nothing wrong. And they lied over and over again. After, and by the way, that's not the important thing. The important thing is the police went on a hunting expedition in the city of Minneapolis. Good apple is essentially my response to what we saw and I actually experienced during my time involved in the criminal justice system. He said in an interview from Houston to Tuesday, it's focused towards bringing change to the nature of policing and bringing it to a point where it works for everybody by empowering the good officers or good apples in the system. The nonprofit will accept donations and have a website with toolkits for shifting the culture of the portal where people can anonymously report police brutality. So, I'm bringing this up because this is a bit of good news. I mean, and giving Jaleel Stallings a massive round of applause and amount of credit, because I don't know if I would be nearly the patient, calm voice that you are, my friend, after what had happened. If that happened to me, what had happened to you? I can honestly tell you that I'd be looking for blood, frankly, because they basically. The character assassination over and over and over again that they did. Just disturbing. I'm saying this story because I frankly don't want to mention this next story, but I'm going to have to mention this next story because it highlights the fact that if you do not have any kind of common sense gun regulation, tragedy will always happen. A toddler found one of his father's guns in the family home in Hinckley, fatally shot himself, according to court documents filed on Thursday. The gunfire occurred about 9 p.m. Tuesday in a home in the 500 block of Southwest 1st Street, according to the search warrant affidavits filed in the Pine County District Court. The court records identify the boy as Thomas Pausa Moore. He died less than 3 weeks shy of his fourth birthday. Searches of the home by the sheriff's office led to seizure of several guns, including an AR-15-style rifle, a shotgun, 9mm handgun that is believed to be the weapon that the boy fired. The filings disclosed. The sheriff's office had been tight-lipped so far about the death. It released the statement Wednesday afternoon tying the boy's death to a medical incident. Why? I mean, this is the Pine County Sheriff sounding like we have to defend the integrity of the gun over what actually happened to this poor 3-year-old boy. Well, the gun owner, this was just an oopsie. It's a tragic oopsie, but come on, it's an oopsie. No, it's not. It's a dead child. Pine County, why were you? Chief Sheriff's Deputy Scott Grice declined disclosure of any further details Thursday other than say the case from his office will be sent to the county attorneys for consideration of charges. The Star Tribune generally does not identify the suspects before they're charged. According to the filings, the boy's father called 911 screaming for help because the boy had shot himself. Deputies and other emergency responders arrived to begin life-saving measures, but the boy was declared dead shortly after 9:25 p.m. The 26-year-old father and a roommate were in the basement when they heard something that sounded like falling, followed by a gunshot. The father ran upstairs and located the wounded boy. The father said the deputy that he kept a 9mm handgun in his bedroom, and his son got a hold of it while upstairs alone. Along with the 6 guns seized from the home, evidence collected included cartridges, casings, and bullet fragments. Okay. So I want to make sure we understand this. Because this is not a 6 shooter. where you know you've seen the old cowboy movies where you put a bullet in each of the chambers and you spin the barrel, and if a barrel is lined up, if you cock the gun and the safety's off, it's going to fire, right? I want to make sure we understand, and this is in Hinckley, not exactly the crime capital of the upper Midwest. Well, this guy had a loaded 9mm with a round in the chamber. You have to cock the gun and get the round in the chamber on a 9mm, if I'm not mistaken. It's not like you slap in the magazine and a bullet automatically goes in there. You have so the magazine was loaded with live rounds, and there had to be a round in the chamber. That even whatever happens next, the only way that whether this child shot himself intentionally or unintentionally, or if the gun had fallen and the bullet come on out and hit him, as it sounds like it might have, something like that might have happened, we don't know. But the reality is this responsible gun owner with a child in the house had a loaded 9mm round gun with a round in the chamber. Now, was the safety on? Think about that. Gun guys want to skip past the fact that there are a series of things here that have to happen before a gun is accidentally fired. But you guys consistently do not take this seriously. First of all, you can't fire the round, a bullet, if there's bullets in the gun, if there are no bullets in the gun. So you have to intentionally put bullets in the gun. They don't just fly to the gun. A human hand has to take the gun, load them into the magazine, smack the gun into the 9mm. They have to be there. The second thing is, you then have to cock the gun to put a round out of the magazine into the chamber ready to be fired. Thirdly, you have the safety on, and then you basically, if you're dumb enough to have a gun like that, you've got to have some brain power to store it where someone can't just accidentally get it at a level where a three-year-old could grab it, because that's the case. They were downstairs. This had to be on top of a nightstand or under a pillow or someplace where the young child was able to have access to a loaded gun with bullets in the magazine, a round in the chamber, and somehow the safety off. Now, to be fair, the gun could have gone off if the child did tumble and drop the gun, it went off. But you see, if you didn't have the rounds in the chamber, and if you didn't have a freaking round if you didn't have the bullets in the magazine and the round in the chamber, even if it would have fallen, it would not have gone off. And I highly doubt that if the safety was on, that even if he dropped it, it would have gone off. Most guns, you know, if you try intentionally to get them to file off around, maybe. But if that safety's on, generally, even if it's accidentally dropped on the ground, it's not going to fire off around. So my guess is going to be this was a gun with bullets in the magazine, a round in the chamber, and the safety off, kept at a level where a three-year-old could find it in a house where a three-year-old was. Or as Republicans call it, responsible gun ownership. I really wish there's going to be someday I could stop talking about these stories. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break and come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Like I said, I welcome the day I don't have to talk about these things. And what's hard for me is what I'm about to get, which I already know. I'm going to get pro-gun kook guy who is going to come in. But man, this is one case. It's a tragic accident. Why are you making political? I'm not making it political. I'm just weeping for the freaking child, because this was an incredibly preventable death. This was an incredibly preventable death. That you guys, You will look at all the stuff. The fact that there were bullets in the magazine. The fact that there was a round in the chamber. That likely the safety was off. And that this gun was kept at a level where a three-year-old could find it. And you say, hey, you know, that's what the Founding Fathers wanted. Founding Fathers wanted all the three-year-olds to blast their heads out. No, they didn't. No, they did not. They did not want that. He had an AR. This guy had an AR-15. If we do not... You guys always say the same thing. The gun didn't kill anybody. Somebody killed somebody. Well, here's a case where this is a three-year-old who doesn't understand what they've got. And so the gun plays a pretty big role here. But even if it was grown adults, one of the things I keep having to hammer to you clowns is that this is a vehicle of destruction, which when someone picks it up is lethal. This is why do you think I come when Ricky Cobb is shot and the officer just wildly fires in the car? They're firing in the car because they don't want to have to track the guy down. They're firing in the car. Don't give me this. Well, he could have used the car as a weapon. He didn't use the car as a weapon. He didn't use the car as a weapon. Your hypotheticals upon hypotheticals upon hypotheticals to vilify how justified they were are just ludicrous. He fired three rounds in a car that was moving basically at his while his partner was on the other side of the car. That's not responsible gun ownership. If you were in the military, you would have learned that. But apparently with police warrior training, blah, 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 it tells you, doesn't matter who's on the other side of that barrel, just fire away. Guns are lethal. And if you don't understand that, you should never have one. Come on, buddy, stay with me, keep breathing. Well, you probably should have thought about that before you put three rounds in the guy. Keep breathing, buddy, keep breathing. Oh, he's dead, oh. You don't want to acknowledge the fact that the person could have an axe, and guess what? They're not going to kill 12 people in a crowd. That somehow, strangely enough, in most households where there are guns, the axe is stored away safely, away from the children. Don't go touch the axe, but I got guns all over the house. Nothing is as lethal as a gun. That's why they are guns. Guns are lethal. And if we continue to not treat them like that, we're going to, this is just the cost of it. And for someone to, and I guarantee you right now, there are people out there, man, I'm not happy the kid's dead, but you know, this is just the cost of freedom. No, it's not. It's not. It's delusional people who have been brainwashed by the gun manufacturers and bullet manufacturers into placing guns uber alles. Steve is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on this. Welcome on in, Steve.
Hey, Matt. Good to hear your voice, and absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. The parent of that three-year-old should be charged with child endangerment.
Completely agreed. How do you have a gun out like that at a place where a three-year-old could get it? Even if it wasn't loaded, there wasn't a bullet in the thing. How is that even possible?
It's bloody insane.
Yeah.
And you know what's even more insane, Matt?
What's that?
Dig this. It's a new product. It's called the JR-15. And it's basically, it's an AR-15 for toddlers.
Oh, I saw that.
Fully functional.
Yeah.
Fully functional.
And they don't care. They don't care. They don't care. And Steve, thank you very much. It's only a matter of time before one of those gets used by a kid to gun down classmates. And they're all going to say, you know, the Founding Fathers wanted 7-year-olds to haul an assault weapon on into their classroom and start gunning people down. That's what they wanted. That's just exactly what they wanted. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. When I do return here, an opinion piece in Newsweek from Matt Robison, a podcast host and former congressional staffer, about, no, don't believe the hype about these Trump indictments. They don't strengthen him at all. We'll talk to him about that and some other issues along this line when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday, 952-946-6205. Joining us right now is Matt Robison. He is a podcast host, former congressional staffer, and he's written an exceptional opinion piece for Newsweek. No, these indictments don't strengthen Trump. That's just media nonsense. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about this this editorial opinion piece. Hi, Matt. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, I'm happy to join you and join the axis of Matt and Matt.
Well, I mean, it's always nice when I have someone who really understands me.
That's right. Deep personal level, right?
You and I are simpatico on this because the minute that all of a sudden it wasn't when the indictments came down, the threats of the indictments came down, there was this narrative being pushed, I think, primarily by the right and as well by, I think, just the media, that, oh, this is the biggest mistake the Democrats are going to make. This, you know, Trump's going to be unbeatable. And I thought it was laughable. You clearly as well agree with that.
Okay. Let's all be clear about this. If you're thinking that anything negative just strengthens Donald Trump, folks, that's the sword of Gryffindor. That's not Donald Trump, okay? I want to say this as clearly as I can. There is absolutely no evidence, if you look at the polling, that all of these indictments have helped Donald Trump. That's the entire point of my piece in Newsweek. And I am happy to run through the numbers. It's what Barack would have called the audacity of math. But when Donald Trump said just this past week, the indictments came in, it's like, oh, this is going to help me. Every time I get indicted, I go up massively in the polls, or some a horse pucky like that. Not true. He's gone up an average of like a point and a half after his last two set of indictments. And after this last set came in, he went up 0.3 points. Like, that's like 0.3%. It's not true. It is total media nonsense.
And those numbers can be accounted for not by the masses, just Republicans who probably are just furious that he's being held accountable, that might not have been, you know, forever Trumpers. They just, okay, fine, I'm tired of the Democrats going after him. So those numbers are completely and totally understandable within the context.
They absolutely are. There's actually a really, I assume that all of your listeners are extremely intelligent and good looking too.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and flatter them by using just a little bit of jargon for a second. There's something in polling known as differential non-response bias, which is just a fancy way for pollsters to make themselves feel important. And basically all it means is if you're a super Trump fan and news like this comes in, then, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of rally effect where you're like, ah, they're coming after my guy. And what it means is that you might be more likely to pick up the phone if a pollster calls. You're more likely to actually answer the poll. And you see this effect happen after major news events on all kinds of issues for people who feel strongly about that issue. And it is very consistent with the effect that we've seen with all of these Trump indictments, a small bump that lasts for a couple of weeks and then fades away. It's what we saw after the Mar-a-Lago raid. It's what we saw after the first impeachment. It's what we've seen after each of the first two tranches of indictments. It's what we're seeing right now. It's nothing to write home about.
Well, and it's similar to, I mean, this is just, it's narrative driving. And, you know, they basically want to seem like everything, we're always going to be the winner, we're always on top, we're always there. And it's, the reality is that this is there. It's damage control. It's good old fashioned damage control. And where is, I think it's helping him to a point within the Republicans. I mean, DeSantis is, you know, and DeSantis is not helping himself. But I mean, as his primary competitor this election cycle, he's falling off the cliff. And so henceforth, you know, I think some of the DeSantis supporters are saying, okay, fine, I'll just go back to Trump. But I don't necessarily feel as if it's going to resonate and create this massive wave back to Donald Trump come 2024 in any capacity. I think most people are furious with people that try to overthrow the government of the United States.
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly the right way to think about it. I mean, just to pose a thought experiment to all of your listeners, Are there any Democrats, any independents out there, any Republicans who have moved on from Trump, and there are some, who are actually going to get this new evidence, these new indictments, look at that and say, oh, now I'm rallying back to Donald Trump. Boy, this really turned me around. What they're doing is they're basically looking in a mirror, seeing what they behold and liking it and saying, ah, everyone might be like this. And there's also a lot of motivated reasoning involved here, especially on the part of the Trump team. One of the effects that I think you're pointing to, that I think you're seeing, is that in the Republican primary, they are all afraid to just stand up and say the emperor has no clothes, or more accurately, the emperor is a raving lunatic who should never be trusted with the nuclear codes. And of course, that's why they're all backing down against him. They're all afraid to criticize him. They all come out with these mealy-mouthed statements after these indictments, like, well, you know, I guess. I mean, even Mike Pence, who's going to be called in this trial to testify against Donald Trump, has said, well, no one who has performed like this should be president. He can't even say the man's name. Again, just to overstretch the Harry Potter metaphor, the man ain't Voldemort, okay? It's all right, Republicans, to stand up to him. But this self-reinforcing narrative of all of this stuff only makes him stronger. You can't possibly go after him because it'll hurt you in the Republican primary. It serves Trump's purposes, and it helps keep all of his rivals in check.
There was, and I'm going to talk about this more in the next hour, but there was a town hall meeting for Tom Emmer, the Republican whip in the House, who is in Minnesota 6. And he actually was confronted by this. And this is, once again, you know, I think some people are confronting him because they're not of the same political ideology. But there are Republicans and what seems to be a larger growing number of Republicans who are of the mindset, if we're going down this path again, no, I don't want any part of this party. And they're just, like I said, I think when you touch on this, there's just a common sense thing that just is people trying to scream into the wind because they know that Donald Trump is truly rotten. And I'm seeing even Republicans who are, you know, very clearly in larger and larger numbers running away from Trump at this point.
You're right. I'm saying that because I think it too. So of course I want to reinforce what you think, but there's also some evidence behind what you're saying. For one thing, there's polling data that suggests that fewer and fewer Republicans believe that he, quote, did nothing wrong. And more of them express openness to pollsters about supporting someone else. The other interesting effect that if you look at the data, it's right there for anyone to look up, is Trump has touted how much of a fundraising boost he's gotten after these indictments. It is true, after the first set of indictments in New York, he did get a massive fundraising spike. You can find it. You can look up the data on WinRed. But what's interesting is that his fundraising bump after the second and the third set of indictments was much, much less. It seems to be wearing off. The other interesting thing is that when his rivals for the Republican nomination have spoken out against him, when they've gone after him, they have seen fundraising bumps. It seems like there is a portion of the Republican electorate that is thirsty for this. They actually want this. It's exactly what you were just saying, Matt. And I think if they could find the last remaining strands of connective tissue in their spines and go down this road and say, you know what? Everyone else is vying to sort of like wait for Trump to fall and then inherit the MAGA voters. What if we went down a different path? What if we actually went after him? What if they all stood up together and did this? I think there is growing evidence that they would find that a much more productive approach, and they might give themselves a much better shot of slaying the demon and winning the nomination.
Matt Robeson joining us, talking about his editorial in Newsweek about the fact that, no, Trump is not being helped by indictments. There is also this problem for Republicans. The mentality they want to be able to say is, sure, Donald Trump did something, but everyone does something, so it's equal. And, you know, we could talk about the fact that the reason why, that, you know, like on the classified documents is, it, you know, he was asked to give them back and he refused to do it and kept stashing them there. Sure, Mike Pence had some, Joe Biden had some from when he was vice president. The minute they realized they searched, they gave them all back and they were done with it. They did an extensive search. That's not what Trump did. And there's the difference. But I'll even give you a more blatant one. They're going after Hunter Biden right now. Everything they keep saying is happening is not happening. They've had testifying after testifying that he did nothing. Meanwhile, Jared Kushner, who worked in the White House, got $2 billion from the Saudis, which was literally, let's just call it what it was, a family payout to the Trump family to allow the Saudis to be able to murder whoever they wanted to. And the reality is these Republicans don't want to look at this. And there is this unbelievable lack of accountability on their one side while they're trying to keep trying to make hay on the other side. I think that a lot of people, maybe not the real diehard Trump fans, but even moderate Republicans that still do exist are like, yeah, okay, you guys are trying too hard to make a mountain out of a molehill here, while there's tons of mountains over here that you guys refuse to even look at.
Well, look, if the world were fair, and if we had a media that was actually accountable and trying to report and be even-handed, in a true, by even-handed, what I mean is objective, not just we have to present ourselves as finding fault with both sides, then everything you just said would have been made true by the media long ago. And this whole gambit of trying to both sides, everything, well, everyone does this, would have been exposed a long time ago. You know, perfect example, James Comer, the Republican congressman, who is like the Inspector Javert going after Hunter Biden. Here's a question for you. Where's the so-called bribe, James Comer? That was the headline in the Washington Post this morning. They have been going after Hunter Biden for a solid year now, holding hearings. They cannot find anything. Their desperation, their sweaty desperation, is beginning to reek. They have headlines on Fox News now where they're suggesting that because Hunter Biden made phone calls to the president and they talked about the weather, that there were secret weather-related codes being passed between the president and his son. And they really meant business. And storm clouds meant, I don't know, sales. You know, and that's all to cover the fact that their hero, their dear leader, had to draw with a Sharpie on a hurricane to make true the BS lie he had just told. You know, look, the entire Republican strategy is an example of what South Park and social psychologists call a DARVO: deny, attack, reverse victim and offender. And we should really focus on that last part. Their entire strategy is about reversing the victim and the offender. Because they have such deep offenses on their side, their only way to survive is to try and say what you just said. Everyone does this, and the very offenses that they have committed, oh no, see, it's actually happening over there. Yeah. It's happening over there. And it's all a smokescreen.
Well, and it's they're going after drag queens and saying, look, they're endangering kids, while they're trying desperately to cover up the insane amount of Republicans and Republican leaning people who have been, you know, endangering kids. And so that's their
Jim Jordan, anyone?
Yeah, exactly. Well, if we could
Denny Hastert, anyone? I mean, he's actually in federal prison, the former Speaker of the House.
Anton Lazaro.
I don't want to talk about his offenses. This is a family show.
Oh, Anton Lazaro. We just had he was sentenced to 21 years yesterday in Minnesota here with a guy was close with the Republican Party in Minnesota. Okay, the one thing though is this, and about this, these kind of stories, they would not have traction if not for a news media that likes to basically doom scroll liberals. They're basically, oh, you're about to lose again. Oh no, this is going to go bad. There is this undeniable, you know, gloom and doom narrative from the media. And that when I look at this, and I call, I'm glad you're calling this out, because the reality is, stop just taking their talking points and running and writing a news story off them. Because the reality is, even a very logical analysis of this argument would show it's ludicrous to think that a person getting indicted for crimes is going to help them out in the long run.
Yeah, I've had the former Chicago Tribune editor Mark Jacob on my show Beyond Politics, which, by the way, shameless plug, I urge everyone to subscribe to when you're not listening to Matt McNeil on the radio, which you should be doing all the time. And he points, I mean, this is something that he actually feels some ownership responsibility. He's actually apologized for on Twitter that he's been part of the mainstream media that has begun to adopt this stance of essentially being willing stenographers and therefore enablers for lying and the creeping autocracy that we're seeing from the Republican Party. The Republican Party long ago left behind the idea that they could win on a fair democratic playing field. And so you've seen them try to juke the vote, suppress the vote. And when they can't win via the vote, like we just saw in Ohio, they try and change the rules, move the goalposts. And if they still can't win under those circumstances, what you see is January 6th. And the mainstream media sees their role as essentially I need to be invited to the right cocktail parties. I need to maintain my access to both political parties. So I'm going to take the quote from this side and I'm going to take the quote from that side. I'm going to report them equally as two equal points of view. My daughter at the dinner table last night was talking about a YouTube video in which flat earthers appeared alongside actual scientists debating the question of whether the earth was flat. I pointed out the logical fallacy here. I'm sure you see it and I'm sure all of your listeners see it as well. You're putting lies and scientific truth on an equal playing field, and you're suggesting that they should meet in the middle and come to a compromise. That is not the way this is supposed to work. And the news media's function is not to be stenographers. It is to reveal truth, present objective facts, and they're not doing it, which means they're not doing their job, and they're part of what's dragging down American democracy. They are.
And last point I want to ask you about is that, you know, part of this, of course, is that new narrative, as you just described perfectly there. But part of it is, too, there are too many Democrats, particularly moderate Democrats, that basically buy hook, line and sinker Republican talking points. I'm going to give out Dean Phillips. He's Minnesota 3. He's the guy that's now thinking, kind of floating the idea he might challenge in primary Joe Biden. Now, first of all, this, I don't care if someone primaries him. That's the system. If someone wants to, you're more than welcome to. I think Joe Biden's done enough to, you know, warrant getting reelected personally. But, you know, there is a system in place if you do want to challenge. That being said, when Dean Phillips comes out and says, I don't think he can win. What I'm not hearing is not a guy who's looking at the reality of all the stuff that Joe Biden has done, but is seeming to basically get his narrative from Republican talking points. And I think that there has to be this mentality of the Republicans are lying and you need to ignore them because they're not telling you the truth.
It's become even more important for Republicans. Look, when I was a congressional staffer, I was a congressional staffer for about 10 years and a campaign operative, ran a bunch of congressional campaigns, and political reality was different in those days in the 2000s. I mean, I worked for Blue Dog Democrats, I worked for centrist, moderate Democrats, and I think that there was a different political reality where it still made sense to kind of play toward the middle and, you know, accept on a good faith basis that there were different points of view on issues like, you know, economics, trade, even cultural matters. But now, as we've kind of covered here, there's such a vested interest from the Republican Party and their co-enablers, co-conspirators, unindicted co-conspirators at Fox News to distort and lie about the truth. I mean, take, for example, President Biden's record. This is a man who's presided over record job growth when Donald Trump oversaw the loss of 6.3 million jobs, the biggest growth in manufacturing jobs in 30 years, the lowest unemployment rate in the last 50 years. And you go down the numbers, the achievements of Joe Biden and this economy, and there's just no case. And yet you find Republicans out there saying Americans are really struggling in the Joe Biden economy. And it is, you know, it's a complete fabrication and distortion. And to accept it and run on it and assume that there's some middle ground, it's like the flat earthers versus the scientists. Some things, there isn't a middle ground compromise.
And I don't think Dean Phillips is saying that verbatim, but he does seem to be echoing a lot of Republican talking points. And I think to myself, as you just laid out, you take a look at the record here. Joe Biden deserves another nod here. And, you know, we got to stop the doom scrolling and just do not buy Republican talking points as facts. Matt Robeson, once again, the podcast is Beyond Politics. It's available. I saw it was on iTunes. It's available pretty much everywhere, right?
Available pretty much everywhere. And we're also, and it's a video version on the Blue Amp channel on YouTube, where we're going to have some of this conversation as well, hopefully. So people should check that out. And look, if you want to escape kind of the both sides as I'm doom scrolling of the mainstream media, listen to Matt McNeil and check out Blue Amp and the Beyond Politics podcast.
And of course, and everyone knows Blue Amp from Cliff Schechter, of course, is spectacular there. I'll link to this actual video of this that you're talking about, this article as well. I'll link to the article a little bit later on. Matt Robeson, once again, Beyond Politics is the podcast. Go find that. Matt, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Absolutely a pleasure. Great to be part of the Axis of Matt.
Thank you. It's nice to be loved. I will take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, once again, you can watch the show. It's radio for your eyes. It's available pretty much in all of our social media threads, right? Facebook, Twitter. Is it on Twitter?
Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, or X now, I guess.
Well, X and then YouTube.
Okay. Sounds stupid saying that. It's on
yes,
X.
It does. Yes, it is. It's on Twitter. No one's X.
It's like we're going to an adult website and we're posting it on X tonight. Yeah.
Oh, nothing. I wasn't there. I have no idea what you're talking about. He's right. Now, I want to say this about Dean Phillips. All right. You can listen to what I just said and I say, you know, are you sure, Matt? This is where you want to go? Here's the thing I'm going to say. Joe Biden has had a freaking tremendous first term. You may not like that, but I think a lot of this narrative of both sides need a new option. And I don't get me wrong. I mean, if when we got to, you know, the same people running over and over again, it kind of sometimes gets ridiculous. But you don't throw out somebody who's actually accomplishing things. That's generally not what you do. And Joe Biden has accomplished things. And I get it. And this is what I mean by I think that sometimes you buy the press that's being put out there. I know a lot of moderate Republicans who of the mindset that you know they know Trump is trouble, but they really can't stand Joe Biden. And so what they're kind of hoping is, can we just get two new people? And when I hear Dean Phillips, I hear a lot of that. I hear this, we just need a change. You know, if you, Dean, if I can say this, you're in the House of Representatives. If you honestly feel as if Joe Biden is unqualified, then the thing you need to do is not tell Joe Biden that he can't run, because quite literally, because of the law, he can run. But introduce a constitutional amendment that says you can't be over the age of blank and serve in any office in the federal government. I don't think, I mean you, with the things with Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein, there are some legitimate arguments that could be made that, yeah, we should not just have lifetime appointments here in certain cases where, you know, it becomes a situation where they're clearly compromised because of their health. Now, Joe Biden so far is not that. He's just a relatively elderly man, but an elderly man that's getting things done. And I'm sorry, I am just not of the mindset of saying, hey, you've been fantastic, we're going to go with someone else. My personal belief is Joe Biden deserves another term because he's been that good. Hour two, that's coming up next. Hour number two of the show here on your Thursday. Matt and Brett here. Robert Burrill going to join us here. He's over at Acme. He's sold out tonight, but I believe there are tickets for tomorrow and on Saturday. We'll talk to him. And I don't know what. I'd have no idea we're going to bring him for them. Well, because we just talked to him last week, but we're going to talk to him again because you know what? He's that good, man. And it's local guy makes good, and I'm going to be on his side all the time. By the way, one quick thing here, because I was talking about Dean Phillips before. Of the Minnesota politicians that seem to be acting like they might be running for a presidential nomination, it's not Phillips, it's Walz. He has been down in Iowa. Now, I know Iowa is no longer the front runner, but he seems to be laying some foundational work down there. Self-proclaimed governor of North Iowa and Minnesota, he's featuring in a video from Iowa Starting Line's Ty Rushing at the Iowa State Fair trying the Iowa Twinkie, which is stuffed and topped with a bunch of stuff. It just garbage food. But, you want to eat right, you come to Minnesota. But he was at the Iowa State Fair. He was at the Democrats of Iowa. He was the keynote speaker, I think, at one of their events. And then he also joined them for the debate they had down there. He was part of that group that did kind of a pre-event on the Democratic side to rip on them. I don't know if this is just the Iowa Democrats realizing, well, Minnesota's kicking our caboose, and so maybe we should bring some of their people down here and try to help us out. But Tim Walz is doing a lot of stuff down in Iowa all of a sudden. I'm noticing that.
Yeah, he has been spending some time down there, and he does have an attractive resume should he decide to do that in the future. Two-term governor of a Midwestern state.
And getting a real big blue accomplishment. Like
said, getting a lot done too, yes.
Here's the thing. If you want, it comes down to Dean Phillips and Tim Walz. Tim Walz, sure, the Uber Lyft bill he vetoed. And, you know, line 3 was a mistake. But when you look at all the bills that came across his desk this last election, this last cycle, this last spring, he signed pretty much almost all of them. If Dean Phillips was in his same position, do you think Dean Phillips would have signed all of them?
Probably not all of them.
No, I don't think he would have. So we'll have to see. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Got news. Pork Chop has been found. Do you know who Pork Chop is?
I do not know.
Pork Chop is the delightful missing Argentine black and white tegu. It's a lizard-like creature. He was found near Oakwood Cemetery on Wednesday. A community member located the four-foot-long lizard.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to be hard to spot.
Yeah, how is this missing? I mean, it's not like there's lizards everywhere in Rochester. I mean, I know it's a little further south than climate change and all, but no. A community member located the four-foot lizard on a bike trail about two blocks from Pork Chop's home. He was found after 5 days. Owner Cody Whitehead said, Tegus, T-E-G-U-S. Have you ever heard of these before? Minnesota Zoo, I got. If this guy's loosey-goosey with this thing again, you might have a new exhibit. Said Tegus's do not eat every day and enjoy being outside on warm days. Oh, who doesn't? Well, I eat all the time. Can't keep me away from the carbs. I love them. During the summer months, Pork Chop spends his time in the sunlight and humidity with a backyard enclosure. So do most, you know, Instagram stars. He was, sorry. It's pork. We could make Pork Chop into an Instagram star probably at this point. I bet he'd have a million followers tomorrow. It's Pork Chop.
I bet that already is an Instagram star.
Oh, I bet
Pork Chop, yeah.
Pork Chop missing. During the summer months, Pork Chop likes to spend his time in the sun. He was missing from his enclosure on Friday, August 4th. Though the enclosure was locked, there was no holes in the area. He can fly! No. If we get to the point of flying lizards, well, that's, you know, there we go. I'm glad for everyone. I know that a lot of people out there are looking for him. Oh, I guarantee you a lot of people were looking for the four-foot-long lizard running amok in Rochester. Whitehead wrote in a message he's going to be inside for the foreseeable future. Well, that's because it's winter coming up here before too long. I don't think Pork Chop's going to go for a stroll out there when the blizzard's coming through. We're happy to have him back and in very good health. Go Pork Chop, the lizard. Speaking of pork chops, Tom Emmer. Well, albino pork chops, I guess. It's the Edgar Winter of the Minnesota Legislative Committee. Tom Emmer decided to have so he had a town hall. This is up in Big Lake. And don't get me wrong, Big Lake's, you know, red territory. There's a, you know, it is a very red part of the state. But it is starting to become a little bit less because you get metro growth. And this is the thing that, I mean, okay. 20 years ago, when I moved back to Minneapolis, Republicans used to represent Edina. Downey, wasn't he the he was the senator out there, wasn't he? Keith Downey was the senator out in Edina?
Yeah, before him you had Earhart, who then switched to being a Democrat.
Yeah.
Could
you run a Republican in Edina anymore and win? I highly doubt it. You know, 15 years ago, Eden Prairie. Sheila Kinney, the war eagle! Sheila Kinney, she ran in Eden Prairie. And they wouldn't even put a candidate like Sheila Kinney on the ballot. There's no way on the planet you could win.
Well, Eric Paulson used to be my rep as I was growing up in the Eden Prairie area.
That's right.
He went on to be a congressman,
far right Republican. And now you're getting to the point where is the metro area grows. I mean, you know, it's Lakeville. Lakeville used to be beet red. Now it's very much a purple with a bluish hint tinge, if you can be honest. And it's creeping northwards, which really is angering the Republicans. It just is. It's delicious how much it's starting to. It is creeping into Blaine, and it is creeping into Anoka and stuff like this. Big Lake's a little further away, but there is some changes happening because Tom Emmer, the albino pork chop. I'm going with it. I'm sorry. I'm going with it. The albino pork chop. He basically had a town hall meeting. So let's go. Let's read some of the recap of what happened in this town hall meeting. Because I don't think it was really as good for Tom Emmer as he might think it was. The town hall opened with a question from Big Lake Mayor Paul Kinnear, who mentioned a planned $38 million wastewater treatment expansion. The mayor asked if there was anything the federal government could do to help with the cost. Well, Mayor, if I may, vote Democrat. Did you see the infrastructure bill? Yeah, a lot of stuff got passed. Vote Democrat, you can get some federal help. But he didn't, probably. Emmer didn't commit to federal funding, but he says he supports spending to help with transportation or wastewater projects. Okay, so he didn't commit to federal funding, but he says he does want to help with transportation or wastewater projects, but not with sidewalks and lighting, which he called luxuries. Lighting, according to Tom Emmer, is a luxury. What is it? Is it the 1400s? You want to see at night? Well, your fancy schmancy candles, your kerosene lamps. No, you can read in the dark like normal people do without your luxurious light. Dear Lord. Sidewalks as well. By the way, Tom Emmer, on behalf of the entire handicapped community, go blank yourself. How about I say that, okay? Sidewalks are a luxury. Yeah, the people that are that need a smooth surface, they can just go on the road. Cars can go around them. Luxuries. Sidewalks and streetlights are luxuries. Notice, I'm going to take a guess here, that if the mayor had asked him about sidewalk replacement, that his answer was, I don't necessarily believe in committing to federal funding, but I'll help with sidewater projects, but not wastewater projects. I think he was just pandering to the crowd. But sidewalks and lighting are luxuries, according to Tom Emmer. He said federal resources are limited and should be used for necessities, noting that while he's a hockey guy, he also doesn't think taxpayers' funds should be used to build rinks. So he's not really a hockey guy. Apparently he thinks everyone's going to be like a Charlie Brown episode where you're out there on the frozen pond as long as the pond gets frozen.
When it comes to playing hockey, ice is kind of a luxury. Yeah. You can play it without the ice and be good to go.
Boards and nets, those are luxuries. I'll pay for the ice. you can have an imaginary net. Wow. That is twisting yourself into knots. And by the way, nice, you missed the dismount there, Tom, at the end where it's like, hey, I like hockey, but I'm not going to help you with your hockey rinks. Because I can tell you, no matter where you are in Minnesota, most people are okay with hockey rink spending, okay? That's not exactly the winning final point on that discussion you think it is. Another man who described himself as a Big Lake resident told Emmer he was horrified and angry by legal attacks on Trump. Emmer responded, it's clear there are two different standards being applied. Now, pardon me for a quick second as I add a little bit of commentary here. Bull crap, Tom. Anyway, with one person facing charges while another sells influence to people around the world off his dad's name. Okay. You guys keep trying to make Hunter Biden happen. Your own investigations have blown up in your face. And even if it was the case, are you comparing Donald Trump to Hunter Biden? Those aren't two equations. You can't equate Hunter Biden. He didn't do anything wrong, but imagine if he did. And then Donald Trump hadn't done something wrong. Oh, it'd be good. You've got to ask yourself the question, if you can charge one person for having classified documents, what about the other one? Well, no. Tom, you're the House Majority Whip. Dear God, Tom Emmer, how did you get this stupid, Pork Chop? That's not going away. That is not going away. Pork Chop, how did you get this dumb? He wasn't charged with having the classified documents. He was charged because he was ordered to return the classified documents and outright refused to do so, stacking them box high in the old bathroom at Mar-a-Lago. Oh, and, trying to overthrow the government of the United States. I mean, that too. And Stormy Daniels and then trying to overthrow Georgia's elections, which, by the way, you can't pardon yourself out of that one. That one's going to stick. So, you can't, both Mike Pence and Joe Biden did have classified documents, but the minute they found them, they went through all their boxes, found everything, returned them as asked. Donald Trump was ordered multiple times to return boxes of classified documents. And not he didn't have one or two. He had box after box after box of classified documents, which he, for some reason, wanted to keep as souvenirs because he's a hoarder. He's a hoarder. So pork chop, wrong again. Armour said, adding that something doesn't look right and telling the man if I feel many ways like you. He told another questioner that he had not read the most recent Trump indictment. Tom, you're the House Majority Whip. What do you mean you haven't read the indictment against the guy who is more than likely going to be your nominee for president of the United States? Don't you think as the House Majority Whip, you might want to read that document? The woman who criticized Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, for receiving $2 billion from Saudi Arabia's crown prince told Emmer he should read the indictment. Yeah, maybe you should. You know, I don't want to put that for you there, House leadership member. Emmer got a question from a man whose mother is a residential memory care and hasn't been able to qualify for Medicare. Emmer followed up with him after the session. Eugene Newcomb of Monticello, a self-described irate veteran, confronted Emmer about a lack of response to many of his calls. Emmer grew testy. I could go with testy. The testy pork chop. Oh, there you go. The testy pork chop. Emmer grew testy. He insisted the calls had been returned and that he would provide the records. Funny. All right, where are the records, dude? Show us that you made the calls back. The reason I'm going to get defensive is because you're attacking people who work for my office. Well, if they haven't called him back, yeah, maybe he's actually got a point. Terry Dickinson of Big Lake stood in the back of the room with multiple signs criticizing Emmer's positions next to a friend with a sign critical of his vote to raise the debt ceiling before the meeting. So he was getting for both sides there. Before the meeting, Dickinson said she's a Republican and that Emmer knew her and wouldn't call on her, but his staffer did. Dickinson complained that the United States has no borders whatsoever. There's lawlessness and no one is getting prosecuted for crimes unless you're a January 6th protester. She's also accused Emmer of turning his back on Trump and his party by saying Congress didn't have the authority to toss out the individual state of electors. They didn't. They didn't have really the authority to basically, with no evidence whatsoever of any wrongdoing, just saying, we don't want this guy to win. We want the other guy to win. Emmer told the woman she'd never been happy with him. She responded with, I helped you, Tom. He told her, don't even start. I'm not here to argue with you. Is this his wife? Come on, Marge. I don't want to hear about it. Don't you love our son? Get away from me, Marge. I don't want to talk anymore. You know what my opinion on this. Take it back to the store. Get a receipt. Emmer also rebuffed a couple who wanted to talk about Kushner on new taxes on the rich. Larry, who didn't give his last name, but it says he lives in Big Lake, spoke at length about politicians not being held accountable, and he says he favors forcibly removing people from office after two consecutive terms. He asked Emmer what he thought. Emmer recalled that when he was in the Minnesota legislature, he sponsored a 12-year term limit ban, but Emmer said that since he's come to believe that the only way to make term limits work is to make them broader so that every bureaucrat is term limited out with every elected official. I don't quite follow what you're saying there. Are you saying that basically you have a one-term limit? Is that what he's saying? Because I got news for you, Tom. Bon voyage.
I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon, a one-term limit.
Every bureaucrat is term limited out with every elected official. So are you saying if they lose, they're out? Because that's kind of how the whole system works there, Tom. It didn't go well for the testy pork chop. Not in Big Lake. Tom, dude, read the indictment. It's embarrassing that you are a member of the House leadership and you don't know what the indictment against Trump in regards to trying to overthrow the government of the United States is actually about. Meanwhile, you can tell me hypothetical upon hypothetical upon hypothetical every bizarro conspiracy theory that that Newsmax, OAN, or Fox has floated about Hunter Biden. You can state them verbatim and say, even though we don't have any evidence, we're convinced something happened. Come on, man. You're supposed to be out looking out for the people, not only looking out for your own butt. Testy pork chop. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More when we do return right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Can we get ready for the Republicans and their... Because we got another one. We got another one that just, you know, let them hate rage. Inflation grew just 1% in the Twin Cities. 1%. The just cost of living rate is like 2.7. Inflation grew just 1% in the Twin Cities over the past year as expenses from housing to food and gas and utilities have cooled more quickly than anywhere nationwide. It's also the lowest year-to-year over year average change the region has seen in 3 years. Across the country, the consumer price index climbed to 3.2% in the past year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics through July. The Twin Cities' low inflation rate over the past year continues to stand out from other metro areas. We're still well below any of our peers, said Tyler Schipper, an associate professor of economics at the University of St. Thomas. He said the annual data, I don't see anything in these numbers that looks like it's going to usurp our position as the lowest inflation metro area in the country anytime soon. However, the inflation in the Twin Cities in the past couple of months is a bit more in the middle of the pack compared to the other metros. He said Minnesota's low consumer price index figure is due in large part to housing inflation here falling more quickly than other places. Twin Cities now housing prices only rose 2.3% in the past year compared to 6.2% nationally. And by the way, that's average is 6.2. You know where a lot of that is? Florida. Florida, I've heard from some people that you go down, people are like, oh, I'll just sell my house in Minnesota and I'll go buy something in Florida. And they can't find a thing that's even close to what they have for the same price in Florida because it's all speculation. Everyone's driving it up. We build so much multifamily housing, it allowed rental prices to come down here a little quicker, said Schipper. Energy prices in the Twin Cities fell 16.7% from last year. That's pretty good. That's, I believe the term is really good, as a matter of fact. Gasoline, natural gas costs both plummeted. Those prices fell nationwide, but the annual drop has been sharper in the Twin Cities there. Yay. We're doing great. The let's see here. So, however, energy costs have been ticking upward the past months with gas and other prices on the rise. That's not necessarily a surprise. It's been something that's been out there a little bit. You're starting to see a little bit of that rise go out there. So this is shoppers are, by the way, are continuing higher prices in grocery aisles, but they aren't facing the dramatic inflation in food prices they saw last year. In the past year, food prices were up 3 to 5%. But the price tag raising far more with people dining out than purchasing food to consume at home. Dairy-related products stood out among the grocery companies in the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Those items saw an 8.3% drop in the Twin Cities past year compared to a 1.3% growth nationally. Wow. So actually, that's got to be a major part of it, the fact that dairy products lost. Well, I mean, they were gouging us. I mean, we've talked about this. If you're having record corporate profits, that's not inflation. That's good old-fashioned greed. That's at the end of the day, that you can't argue that statistic. If you have record profits for your company, it's not inflation. It's greed. That's all that is. The latest grocery data follows forecasts from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that showed grocery prices might fall or at least see lower price growth next year. Core inflation, which does not include volatile food and energy prices, is the key number to watch. Since last July, it was up 2.4 in the Twin Cities, 4.7 nationally. However, That growth appears to have been moderated recently, rose only 0.2 nationally in the past month. Needless to say, things are going pretty well here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Once again, I was in Minneapolis-St. Paul today. Had lunch. As a matter of fact, I was in Minneapolis-St. Paul yesterday. I went to the Walker Art Center, took my mom to the Walker Art Center and saw the Placide Abad exhibit. By the way, go see that. That is exceptional. That really, same thing happened when I went to it. That my mother, when she went to it, she used to be a trends buyer and for a major store chain. And she basically was like, who is this? I have never seen anything so unique. Fantastic. Placide Abad's magnificent. But tons of people down that little sculpture garden right in the heart of the downtown, packed. And I can tell you right now, I've had to drive around a lot in the morning this last week. You keep saying it's a ghost town. Where are these people going? Because these roads are packed. Are they just driving in circles? Is this like the Truman Show, or it's just a bunch of stunt cars? And just I guess gonna go drive for a while. Because things are going well here. I will say one place they're not going well. Housing prices are out of control. Grocery prices down in Florida are extraordinary right now. And it's through the roof. So as you Republicans like to say, I hate it here. It's so much better. They don't have taxes in Florida. Beryl is going to join us when we do return. He's at Acme this weekend. We'll talk about those shows. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I can't tell you how happy I'm about to tell you is going on right now. Robert Beryl is playing the Acme. He's sold out tonight. Freaking awesome. And I hear tickets are going pretty quick for the weekend shows. He's got four shows, two shows on Friday, two shows on Saturday. You want to go get him. He's at Acme Comedy Company this week. Of course, Robert Beryl, comedian extraordinaire, is kind enough to join us today. Hey, Robert.
Hey, just try getting into the show tonight. I dare you.
Sure
just
thing.
Try.
Taylor.
Yeah. I've always had this fantasy of you see bands do this where they have just massive followings and be like, yeah, we're doing a pop-up show at this comic book store at 2 a.m. And then sure enough, 500 people show up. There's a line around the block. And I've always had this fantasy of doing like a pop-up stand-up show at 3 a.m. at a coffee shop, and just, and it would never happen because no one would watch comedy like that. But just the sheer level of self-confidence and narcissism to be like, I'll tell you what, I'm performing and it's not going to be convenient.
Sure thing, Bansky.
I'll be in the back of a van in Peoria, Illinois, 2 a.m. tonight, get there. And then to have people actually do it would be pretty empowering, but I'm not holding my breath.
What we need to do with you, absolutely. Now that you brought this up, I'm going to do this. We need to call Waffle House. Find a Waffle House. Say, I'm going to be doing a show at 3 a.m. in a Waffle House. First of all, I guarantee you're going to have a crowd there. They're probably all going to be drunk or on meth, but they're all going to be there.
Well, I mean, I'm usually performing in front of drunk people anyway. The meth would be a pleasant addition. We'll see how it plays with the meth heads out there, but not entirely too different from the substances my audiences are usually on.
Well, we could. That would actually be brilliant, man. We got to, seriously, I mean, I love Waffle House. I go to the South, I always hit one. And yeah, and it stays with me for a while, so I don't have to do it too often. But we go down there. You do like a show, and I'm like, this is a brilliant idea. We got to find one. You do national touring. Are you heading back on the road nationally before too long?
Yeah, I'm in D.C. with my buddy Steve Gillespie, yeah. September 8th and 9th. I'm doing the D.C. Comedy Loft. I'm doing Boise at the end of September. I think it's the 25th, 26th, whatever that last weekend is. My October is open, though. I could probably go down south in October. And I mean, it's funny because a lot of comics like Maria Bamford and Drew Michaels, they will do these sort of unorthodox almost specials where Maria did like an hour in front of just her parents. I think Drew Michael did one like in front of no audience or whatever. And so I do think that, I mean, I don't know whether or not it's going to happen, but it is a really fascinating idea. It's like doing like a full set in just an operating Waffle House, just stuck over in the corner and like cutting at people's reactions and stuff. Because even if they don't like the material, it's still going to be pretty entertaining.
I want to do it just to watch the expressions of the people's faces that come on in. They're like, what's going on here? But no one will stop because it is a Waffle House. And they are just, yeah. They are such bizarre places.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, especially if you're a Waffle House customer, you've developed a fair amount of skill in just ignoring whatever mental health crises are happening around you to continue to eat your eggs and stuff while, you know, the shouting match goes on or the tweaker tries to hold the place up or something. And, you know, so the idea of me out there tossing out Lyndon Johnson references while people slather up their pancakes is, it's definitely funny. It's worth considering.
Yeah, the tweakers are loving the raisin bread tonight. Good to see you guys. Good to have you here. I might know some people that could possibly help you out with that. If we wanted to try to pull something like that off, we could maybe do that.
It sounds like something I wouldn't advertise doing it, like Robert Burrell live at the Waffle House. But it would be a funny thing just to shoot on my own. And then if it amounts to nothing, it amounts to nothing. But it's definitely, I do like that idea.
You have to be prepared. You don't know what you're going to, because it's just as much of a surprise for you what's going to happen as it is for the audience. So it's going to be a hoot.
Oh, yeah. And I've also done enough like horrible shows where, I mean, if all they're doing is just quietly eating their bacon while I do my set, like, it's still not going to be the worst show I've ever done.
Be like doing one in a morning buffet in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just ignore them. We'll go play slots later. The Acme Comedy Company, you're there this weekend. Latest news. This is from MinnesotaComedy.com. I'm reading this story here. Robert Burrell is firmly established himself as the most prolific tropical comics in the Twin Cities today. It's not my nature to offend people, but I do think it's the nature of the job, Burrell says, out of his shows this week. Nice write-up, by the way, in M in Comedy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, the title of that article is Terrorism is Bad, and that kind of, it's sort of because I was talking about how some of the material that I'm doing, I don't think it's controversial, but just because I don't think I'm in the wrong. Like, I do a bit where I joke about suicide bombers, and there's some pullback, and it's like, okay, I get it, but God, can I at least joke about terrorists? Is that cool? Can we all agree that terrorists are a fair target? Because if we can, I don't know what to do for you at this point. Like, this is, because that's the other thing too, where it's like, okay, I'm aiming for the middle here. This isn't a left issue. This isn't a right issue. ISIS, can we agree ISIS is the bad guys? Is that okay? You know, so it's tough too, where it's like, okay, maybe it's controversial, but I'm fine just sitting in it, no matter how uncomfortable it is, because I know I'm right. Terrorism is bad. Like, I'm not wrong on this issue.
There's no moment where you're saying, am I right on this? I mean, are there good moments of terrorism? Not really. No, I'm with you on this one.
Well, I understand the hesitancy of, you know, because it's like the very Minnesota nice thing of like, well, but they were these young boys they were got to when they were uninformed and they came from poverty and they were subjected to extremism. Like, okay, but you can't take that approach to every single bit of comedy. Like, oh yeah, my wife sucks at cooking. Well, did she ever really learn how to cook? I mean, maybe like now you just have a brain that just doesn't understand comedy or appreciate comedy because like. Yes, there's reasons for stuff, but that's not funny.
You have to be able to laugh. You have to be able to laugh.
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. So sold out last night, right?
Yep.
Wow. Sold out tonight, right?
I believe so, yeah. Wow. I mean, that's on the website thing. I think part of it is, like, because some of the tickets are pre-bought or whatever, because there's, like, an Acme Insider thing, so they get hip to the shows that are happening first, so there's a small chance if you wanted to come tonight, maybe you could get a seat in the back. But to be safe, I would just aim for one of the two Friday or two Saturday shows.
And there are tickets still available for those shows. But, I mean,
yes.
this is fantastic. I can't tell you how happy I am you're selling out, man.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, it definitely feels like it's starting to come together a little bit more as people find out about me and appreciate the kind of humor I'm doing. And I have sort of developed a niche for myself. There's a few other comics. Brian Miller is one, and that do a lot of topical stuff as well. But as I've gotten older and more comfortable with tackling issues that may or may not be more controversial, I think I've sort of made that my niche and more comfortable just running with it, despite, you know, losing some audiences at times.
Well, and by the way, when I say sell out, I'm not talking about the fact that now you're the spokesperson for Monsanto or something like that.
It's like... Yeah, I'm not doing my pillow ads. or just selling equipment at this point. I think it's just a fire sale at his place. But
do you need a pillow stuffer? Boy, we've got one here, and it's rock bottom prices. Robert Burrill, kindly enough to join us once again. Acme Comedy Club tomorrow night, two shows. Saturday night, two shows. I'll put the link up there. You need to go to those shows. They're hilarious. I did not ask you last week when you visited the Do you try to, you have the summer here. You've done a lot of touring. You've been out on the road. But do you try to, kind of find a niche to find a week or two where you can take some time off in the summer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll inevitably have a few weeks off in the summer, but I still try to stay informed. I'm usually getting the newspaper like the step grandpa that I am. I like the feel of the newspaper, the texture. I don't know. It just feels more authentic than an article on your phone that could be from whoever. So I'm always writing. I'm always reading. And so even if I'm not performing, I'm still kind of working those muscles. And if anyone wants to follow me on Robert Burrill 2 on Instagram, or Instagram Comedy on Instagram, or just Robert Burrill on Facebook, then usually throughout the week, I'm posting a few one-liners and stuff, and sometimes I make it in the act, and sometimes they don't. But I find plenty of time to relax. But it's the mind is always going. You know, I'm always thinking up little one-liners and stuff. I've worked with so many road dogs doing comedy in Iowa and Illinois and Michigan and Wisconsin, with guys that have been around since like the early 90s, and you can clearly tell that they have not written a new joke in 25 years. And it's like, how can you do that? Like, if audiences laugh, they don't know any better. But it's like, just to go out there with the same thing night after night for 25 years, and it's, you know, they got like the, oh, what if you had a tracheotomy but go through the fast food line? Like, what would you like to have? I would like a cheese. Are you making fun of it? And like, dude, this bit's so old. Like, you know, I got nothing right now. But it's an old bit.
Well, but I got to imagine it's hard for the, you know, okay, you see it from the side. You're the insider. But even for the audience, if you get someone who's so familiar with it, there's no spontaneity to it. There's no, I mean, the good comedians who are constantly turning over new material, part of the reason, and you're still, I mean, even if you're doing, say, a 20-show tour across the country, you're still doing it 20 times. So you're going to be able to hone it and kind of get it there. You're doing it 400 times. You know, it's going to look like you're mailing it in.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for challenging audiences a little bit. Like, obviously, don't go up there and piss them off the whole time. Like, you know, I don't think there's any more Andy Kaufmans out there that are just like reading The Great Gatsby for an hour until everybody walks out and it's performance art or something. Like, I think you should actually try to make them laugh. But I think a lot of club owners, and this is a credit to Lewis Lee, who owns Acme, was he sat me down when I got hired and he told me about how when Mitch Hedberg was a feature here, would routinely walk half the crowd, but Acme stood behind him and they're like, no, we see something. And you know, flash forward 10 years and everybody's doing Mitch Hedberg in every club because he's become the hot thing. But, the new thing, it wasn't popular. It was just new and some people didn't care for it. And so I think it's just kind of like the cultivation of voices that, you know, once they click, they're going to be something and they're not right now. And some people might not care for it. But then the flip side is like, oh, people like this? Okay, well, just give them this for the next 30 years. Michael, that's not helping anybody. The comic's not growing. The audience is just laughing at trivial BS. And I don't know. I just think it's so much better when you have performers that, you know, are trying to push some boundaries a little bit, and audiences and clubs that are willing to, you know, give them that space to explore, and it makes it just so much better.
The when you do it, and by the way, he mentioned his social media accounts. Follow them; they're hilarious. I've retweeted many of your jokes. Quite
yes,
good
I
stuff.
Thanks, man.
You're brilliant, man. You are absolutely brilliant, and I'm tickled pink. I'm absolutely tickled pink. When you do a vacation, when you do take time off, are you staying in town? Do you go to a cabin? Do you travel out of the area? What is your version of vacation? What does it look like?
Let's see. Well, my wife is very keen on Florida. She spent some of her formative years in Florida, so we might go to Sarasota or something like that. And usually I'm inspired by some, you know, typical Florida thing. So I can't escape the material. It always presents itself, especially in Florida. But it is very beautiful down there a lot of the years. It's kind of like this combination of like really scenic beauty, but then also just like really degenerate, crazy people. In the same, like if you're like, I want to see the most beautiful sunset I've ever seen in my life, and I also want to watch two guys without shirts fight over a rocket launcher. And you're like, well, Florida is where you would go for that.
I had a friend that went down there, and he was out over by the launch site where they do the Cape Kennedy. Is that what it is over there? And he was over there, and he's on the beach, and it's like this. He goes, you're looking out, and you have this beautiful, gorgeous beach and this beautiful sunset. In the background, one guy was singing something horribly out of tune, and another guy was screaming like he was being gutted. You know, and so here it is. He says, that's Florida for me. You're looking out. You got this nice beach, lovely ocean, and this, you know, howler monkey exhibit behind you the entire time.
Yeah, that's Florida. So Florida, usually it's that, or maybe up north. I'm from northern Minnesota. I don't go all the way back up to Waro, but just like some little cabin by a lake or something. I don't fish, but I do find it peaceful to be out there, and I can read my book or, you know, just kind of, because I do have to, kind of cut off news for a while. And
yeah,
because it does wear down on you. Like, I mean, to me, it's therapeutic to joke about, but certainly it's not good for your psyche to be immersed in the news day after day, week after week. You're going to have a breakdown. But so when I disconnect, I like to do that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. If you don't walk away from it a little bit, you're going to burn out. Do you make it back up to Bemidji? I know you're Bemidji State. You were up there.
Not
Do you make
as
it back
much.
Up there? No?
No, not as much. I got a buddy up there that's talking about bringing me up to do a show, so I'll have to see if that happens. But one of my best friends from college used to live in Bemidji, so up until maybe 6 years ago, I would be up there at least two or three times a year hanging out with him and stuff. But he's since moved to Moses Lake, Washington, so I don't really make it back up to Bemidji much anymore. But I don't know. We'll see. If that show can happen, maybe I'll go back.
What, did you decide to become a cannibal? You moved up to Moses Lake, Washington. Sounds like some place up in the ravine where they get snowed in and you have to start sizing up the, who am I eating this year?
Yeah, it does sound like the setting of a true crime story on Cold Case Files or something. You know, that happened at Moses Lake.
Robert Burrill is at Acme. If you want to get tickets, you need to get them now. Friday night, 7 and 9:30. Saturday night, 7 and 9:30. Do not wait. If these ticket sales go like they've been going, these are going to get sold out or get close to it, and you want to get in there and get to go see these shows. I'll put a link out to Acme and all this a little bit later on. Robert, I'm so happy for you. Enjoy the full house tonight, and anytime you want to come back, you just let me know, okay?
Hey, thanks, Matt. I appreciate all the support.
You got it. All the time. I'm so happy for you. And I'm going to make the Waffle House thing work. I'm going to figure out a way to make
all
that
right,
work.
Please do. All right. Please do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let you know where I'm sending you, but it'll be a Waffle House somewhere in the lower states.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. Robert Burrill, kind enough to join us today. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Go get tickets to Burrill now. If you've not caught him, he's hilarious. And I don't see his trajectory going any other direction but up. And if we can make that Waffle House thing work, just going to find Buck Snort, Tennessee or something like that. Put him in the Waffle House out there. Oh, I don't know if I want to put him in a Florida one. That would, I don't know if that'd go well. I know one that might be a good option. It's going to have a little bit of weirdness to it, but not that weird. That might be the place to go.
That goes well. That would make a great special.
Oh, it would, wouldn't it? Live from the Waffle House. It'd be one of the, yeah, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to see if we can make that happen. I would, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I got to put this out here. I caught this story at the very end, right before I came to the station. I wanted to mention this. An internal investigation is underway when Kenosha activists are speaking out after a video shared by social media appears to show a Kenosha police officer reportedly striking a man the officer wrongly thought was involved in a serious hit-and-run crash. Police would later find their suspects inside the bathroom of a restaurant. The incident took place at July 20th at the Applebee's, which was doing its own. July 20th at the Applebee's off Highway 50 in Kenosha. The crash happened on Highway 50 and Green Bay Road around 11:30 p.m. Witnesses said described two black males and one black female who fled on foot towards Applebee's. Another witness who stated that the female was carrying a child, according to police. An employee at the restaurant said some suspicious people were inside the restaurant and they believed to be involved, according to police. The employee then directed officers to two people, including a man seen being arrested on video who is black and holding a baby. I'm not doing anything. I'm cleaning up the language a little bit. I guess you can figure. I'm not doing blank. Let me the blank go, the man yelled as the officers attempt to take the baby from him and take him into custody. The baby is eventually removed from the man's arms. The officer is thrown to the ground down on his stomach. A moment later, an officer appears to begin striking the man near his head, yelling commands of put your hands behind your back as he's beating him. Police said the male was being detained as the crash was being investigated. The male, you're not being detained. He's being beaten in an Applebee's. That's got to be up there on the scorecard for at least dignified way. The male attempted to leave against the officer's orders, was restrained. He resisted, and the incident has been caught on camera, unfolded from there. The man, according to police, was not responsible for the hit and run. So once again, I want to make sure we understand something. As everyone sits there and says, what are you doing, man? Just do what the cops say. The cops come up to you. You're black. The cops come up to you, try to yank your baby out of your arms. You've done nothing wrong. You're asking, what are you doing? They say nothing. They just throw you on the ground and start, as you're on your stomach, beating the back of your head. Wow. Great police work there. The man, according to police, was not responsible for the hit and run. However, police said he'd been charged with disorderly conduct, resisting and obstructing an officer. The female who was with him also received the same charges in possession of marijuana. Police then discovered the individuals responsible for the hit and run inside the bathroom. So basically, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that if the police come up to you and start trying to yank your kid away from you and you do anything but, sure, officer, take my child, that basically they're going to trump up a bunch of fake charges, beat you in the floor of an Applebee's when you haven't done anything wrong. And by the way, Applebee's, let me make sure you understand this. The civil lawsuit that's about to come your way is going to be deep and long, okay? You are going to lose a ton of money because one of your own employees identified the wrong people that the police beat up. They just saw black person, and once again, let's call it what it is. The Kenosha police saw black person, didn't actually see if they matched the suspects, and proceeded to beat them in the Applebee's, claiming you're angry older brother. You're resisting arrest. You're resisting arrest. You're resisting arrest as they punch them in the back of their head. Ugh. More on this probably going to be before too much longer. Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake. That's coming up next. We are back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.